Blog Talk Radio.
Cut it off?
Clearly.
Oh, man. Welcome to the URN radio show on the mouth of the South, the Paranormal Outlaw. And joining me, as always, is Martin Bravo and the dome hater himself, Jeffrey Sterl.
Damn right.
Oh, man.
Just let the wrong little Pantera to start off a show, man. That's awesome.
Hell yeah.
Well, today is the 9-year anniversary of Dimebag Darrell's passing.
That's right. Oh, man, 9 years passes so quick.
And it's also the 33rd anniversary of the passing of John Lennon.
Oh, holy crap.
Wow. Well, did you survive all the ice and snow there, Martin, in Dallas?
Oh, man, I went out, I think, Saturday night or Saturday to go get some supplies, and I came pretty close to becoming a ghost myself, man. It was I spun out a couple times on the highway, but I was able to, you know, regain traction again to be able to make it home.
Yeah.
And yeah, I never knew what cobblestone ice was until yesterday when it was on a bridge that I was driving home, and I was like, holy crap, this is what they're talking about? It's like, I mean, dude, it's like balls of ice are like maybe up to 12 inches tall, and it just makes the road all rough and rugged, and it's just, yeah, it was bad.
Right?
Yeah. All we got was rain all weekend.
You know, from what I understand, Highway 35 has been a parking lot, like, for the last, you know, 48, almost 72 hours.
Really?
Yep. There's people still out there, man, that have been stuck there since Friday.
That's crazy.
I'd have been like, hell with this, I'm walking.
I'm kind of hoping that's what people did. They just left their cars behind because, I mean, think about it. Getting stuck in a car for 3 days, you know, under freezing temperatures, man, that's just no good, man.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I left my car. But if we were stuck in traffic for, like, longer than 45 minutes, I would have abandoned my car. I'd be like, screw this, walking.
Wow. But yeah, it's crazy how you disappear from the paranormal and the paranormal kind of falls back in your lap.
Yeah.
I got a residential call through one of our friends, and went out there. It was the night before Thanksgiving, and crazy stuff going on out there. And in fact, our guest tonight, Bishop Christina Rake, has been helping me on that case. This is one of those situations where the clients are renting this place, so they kind of moved into the shit storm, and they're going to have to move. There's no way of an immediate fix, and it's really, it's as bad and as dark as you can get.
Holy crap! Is it the family that's there, or is it the location?
The location. It's attached to the land.
Dang.
And there's a portal there that's been open. Multi spirits there, including a demonic, and the owner of the land, of course, that rents the house there, you know, he would have to be involved, and we'd have to get somebody in there that can close a portal down and clear the land, and it'd be a long, it'd be a long strung out battle. So I don't know if that's going to happen. But he did say that he's noticed that renters don't stay there long.
Well, I could imagine.
Yeah.
With spirits attached to land, it's not, you know.
Yeah, it's a whole different ballgame when you got that going on. The history of this land, Bishop did a remote reading. It's got animal sacrifice, child sacrifice. There's bodies buried on the land. There's been a fire. There's been occult practices. There's been drug dealers. There's been murder. There's been rape. There's been child molesting. You name it, has been done there.
Kind of sounds like colonial times America.
Well, you know, a lot of it that she's picking up was dated back in the late 1800s. Which it's about 6 miles from Nacogdoches, which, you know, Nacogdoches is the first town in Texas, first settlement.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole area is just filled with lots of history.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot to be going on in one land, that, you know, or one piece of land for however long. I mean, that's child sacrifice. That's kind of crazy, man.
Yeah. So, I've dealt with that. not a great thing to deal with, but at least the clients are somewhat spiritual, and they're sensitive.
Uh-huh.
They, you know, the mom can see spirits and talk with them and that kind of thing, and she's up trying to learn her own gift a little bit more. But
cool.
Yeah, so it wasn't like when I was telling her all this, she thought I was crazy or anything. She, in fact, a lot of it, she read and then just got confirmation from what Christina picked up as well. So that was confirmation enough for her.
Dang. That's crazy. It makes you wonder how many families, you know, moved in and out of there and never, you know, thought to seek out help.
Right, exactly. So we had that, and Jeff and I and Dad, we went on a little adventure last weekend, right, Jeff?
The Friday before last, yep.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that. We went out to a cemetery. I'll have to pull those EVPs not necessarily if we got any EVPs, but some of the things we were saying to one another while we were out there was pretty damn hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
especially when we were doing the ghost box session, sitting down, we were our typical insulting each other. Dad and I did see a ball of light that went across the cemetery and then just disappeared. It was really weird. Now, I thought I was the only one that saw it, and I was flashing my flashlight to see if I could get a reflection off something. And when I was doing that, Dad's like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I saw some of it." He said, "It was a ball of light." I said, "Hell yeah." And he pointed the same direction I saw it.
Nice.
So that was pretty cool. No one wanted to take, I did ask the spirits if anybody wanted to take a run at Jeff's ass, and no one took me up on that offer.
Did y'all ask and see if Jeff was the paranormal sensible?
Yeah. We got to know.
They knew about it, man.
Jeff said that he heard a yes, but I did not hear a yes at all. I think Jeff's delirious when it comes to that. He's trying to, you know, we always talk about that, Martin, about trying to project our thoughts through the ghost box, and I think that's what he tries to do.
Like I got those abilities.
Well, you're hoping that somebody out there is going to go, "Hell yes, you're the paranormal sex symbol."
I don't need that confirmation.
I told you almost 3 years ago when we started this show, you got to have 10 pieces of evidence that shows me from the spirits confirmation that you are indeed the paranormal sex symbol.
And every and bit almost, of evidence I have shown you, you've said, "No, that ain't real."
No, that wasn't definitive evidence.
Yes, it was.
No, you're killing me. No. Like I said, it's almost 3 years later, and you still haven't given me 10 pieces of definitive evidence. And so...
That's because I don't need the affirmation. I already know.
I guess if you're the only one that knows, then I guess that's good. But
Martin,
I know that you're another word that we won't say on air.
That's because you know better.
This
belt doesn't hold my pants up.
Speaking of crazy stuff, and I'm not going to get explicit with it. I might later. I don't know. I know it's no holds barred when me and Jody get together on Tuesday nights, but there are some crazy-ass people out in this world. She had posted the other day this newspaper article about this woman. I want to say it was in West Virginia, but not to go into great detail, but this woman went over to her estranged husband's house. I guess they were separated or whatnot, and him and a buddy were over there, and she pulled a knife on them and told them that either one of them was going to, how can I put this without being explicit, lick the ice cream, if you know what I mean.
What?
Yeah. Or, yeah. She told them that either one of them was going to eat her out or she was going to slice their fucking throats. That was basically what it said. And,
wow.
Yeah, so the husband said, "Hell no," and the older gentleman, this is a newspaper article, I'm not lying, I've seen it. The older gentleman decided to do that, and she got disrobed, and he noticed a very overwhelming smell coming from down there, and he passed out, fainted and passed out.
Wow, man, that's pretty bad.
Now, Jake, that is crazy. People are nuts, dude. That's crazy. Why
yeah,
the heck do you do that? Go into somebody's house and tell them that you're going to do this thing to me, and with a knife, I'm going to cut your throat. And then the dude passes out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know where to start with that story. I mean, that's just crazy. I mean,
you got nothing?
I got nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure Bishop Rake is sitting there just laughing her butt off right now. She's in the chat room listening to the show, getting ready to call in here in a minute. So, yeah. But, yeah, you know, I don't know how Jody finds all these stories, but every Tuesday she does, she pulls up weekly stories, news, actual news that's happened in the world of crazy things that people are doing in this world.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's kind of over the top, you know, like, wow, like, who would just do that? I mean, why would you even walk to anybody's house, pull a knife, and say that?
I don't know, dude.
That's kind of, I mean, I don't know, man. You know, that's really what this world's been coming to the last, you know, couple of months is just, it's always this time of year. I mean, you learn to see like how evil people can actually be, and it's all over Christmas, man.
Well, I'll share one more story with you that's local that just happened that me and my brother were talking about, and then I'll read the bio of our guest and get her on.
Sweet.
Here in Longview, a individual decided to throw coffee on a police officer here and then beat him over the head with a coffee cup.
What?
Just for the hell of it, yeah.
Just for the hell of it, or was there a good reason?
No, it was like he was in one of those convenience stores or whatever.
Just hit somebody with a coffee cup?
A cop, dude. Not just anybody, a freaking cop.
He probably walked up to the cop and asked him if he had donuts when the cop said that he did not have donuts. The dude lost his mind. You got any donuts in my coffee?
Here's a messed up statistic. Did you know that Japan holds the record for the world's biggest orgy?
Yeah, how many billion people were involved in that?
It was 500 people.
Holy shit.
Oh, man.
Could you imagine how bad that house stunk?
Oh, man. It's already starting to go downwards. But,
yep.
Oh,
yeah.
Well.
It's like, man,
oh,
it
well.
Smells like a dirty sauna in here.
After the weekend I've had, I need some good laughs. So I'm going to go ahead and read about our guest, and then we'll wait on her to call in here. Let's see. Scroll down here. All right. Why is it doing that? Oh, here we go. All right. Tonight our guest is Bishop Christina Rake, and I had her on Terrify Radio a couple weeks ago. She's a minister, a psychic medium, a healer, and a paranormal investigator. She also hosts a radio show on Bishop Long's radio network. She is a minister of the Charismatic Universalist Church, which is rooted in ancient traditions of the first century Catholic theology. Bishop has a PhD in theology and has been a bishop the last 5 years. She's such a joy. She's out of Chicago, Illinois, and very funny, very laid back, and really great at what she does. And I can't thank her enough for helping me with the case that I got dealt with. So, really good woman. So she said, hang on, she's got a tech issue. So we're waiting.
Check this out.
Yeah,
I just stumbled across an article. This is published by Spiritual Freedom Church. This guy, I don't know who this guy is, let me see if I can find his name. His name is Reverend Bob Larson. He's got a demon test.
He has
a test. It's 21 questions to determine whether or not you have a demon.
Yeah,
so just for fun, I clicked on start the test, and you got to pay to take this thing.
Yeah, this guy's kind of like an internet sensation. He was a preacher that got famous off of TV. And he started writing books about blaming the music and Satanism for Columbine High School.
Oh, man.
It's one of those guys, yeah. He's pretty well known in the in the Christian sect of things.
Mm-hmm.
I unintentionally bought one of his books because of the title of the book. It was like Kids Killing Kids. And I was reading it, and I was about halfway through it, and then I realized it was not really a religion bashing, but a lack thereof bashing. Like he's bashing the music industry, saying that Eminem and Marilyn Manson is the reason why things like this happen.
Oh, of course.
No, no.
I mean, never blame.
He would hate me.
Yeah. Never blame the parents' inability to discipline their kids properly,
When shit goes down, we try to find the simplest way of pointing the blame at somebody instead of looking at the issues us as humans have going on. Yeah,
yeah,
there could be something spiritual going on with the individuals that commit these crimes, right? They could be haunted by a demon, but at the same time, they could have very severe mental health issues that no one picked up on because let's face it, a lot of parents are not involved in their kids. They don't pay attention, or they're working a lot of hours to even pay the bills. So. I mean, there's a lot of issues. Yeah, there's a lot of issues out there that can cause these kind of events to happen. To say that, I've never once in any of the music I've listened to said, man, what they just sang about, I'm going to go do. Damn it, let's go do it.
here's another thing. You've heard about all these cops going crazy and killing people and dogs and stuff and getting away with it. There's actually this guy doing a study on it, and he calls them the 13s or something, like the 13th generation in America. And he said this kind of stuff didn't start happening until like games like GTA came out and first-person shooter games, and said it's narrowed down to a certain generation of American culture where these cops are just like – they're like – Dirty Harry all of a sudden. And
hold on just a minute, because I'm going to look up mass shootings in America. To see if the person claims that they didn't happen until then, I'm going to call BS on that.
I've played Grand Theft Auto, and I don't wish to go out and steal a car and then run rampant through a town, shooting people and breaking into cars, taking off with them, that kind of thing,
The first one to happen in America happened in Camden, New Jersey on September 6, 1949.
Yep.
They killed 13 people.
Wow. There's another one, like, way earlier than that, right? Like the 1800s?
In America, in this part of the world, no. At least not on record.
Well, our guest is on hold, so let's get her in here as well.
Sweet.
Okay. There we go. And now we're good.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, I'm great.
Great.
all at once. Hi, guys. Thank you for having me. It's really nice to talk to you again.
Oh, yes. And thank you for all the help you've been giving me here lately.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, we were just talking about the craziness in the world.
Yeah, it's pretty surreal sometimes out there. You never know what's going through someone's head. Typically not thought.
Yeah, I seriously think it's like just some people are just crazy, you know?
Yeah, whatever happened to crazy? All of a sudden everything's like psychologized. Evil is a psychological thing in a certain area of the brain. I'm like, no, sometimes people are just stupid. And sometimes people are just evil.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just the way it is.
Yeah, I know. It just seems like when things go bad, people try to find, you know, the simplest solution of pointing a finger at somebody or something, you know? And, you know, like that, like Martin was talking about earlier, you know, people that do things, then automatically people are like, oh, that was a demon that did that, you know? And then you're like, here we go again with all that kind of talk, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, and the every attempt to find a reason for something or to pin blame or assign blame is an attempt to control whether or not bad things will happen to us. Because if we can say, well, you know, God did that to teach him a lesson, well, then if I learn all my lessons, that won't happen to me. this happened because they were doing this video game. Well, if I don't play that video game, that won't happen to me. And the fact of the matter is, because of free will, we all have the right to make choices. Bad things happen in an almost random way. And if you just give up control, you stop needing to blame things and just say, well, you know, shit happens.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, you know, there are 7 billion people on Earth. Odds are in the favor that something really bad is going to happen eventually.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to land on someone's head, and we all have our due. Sometimes it just happens, and you can't turn around and blame this one and sue that one. I mean, you want to talk about crazy? What the hell happened to an accident? There's no more accidents. Everything's an on purpose.
Oh, yeah, for real.
You know, I'm sorry you slipped on the ice in front of his shop, but you know what? Wear better shoes next time. Don't sue him.
Dr. Scholl slipped, you know?
Yes, exactly. If you're that clumsy, wear cleats. That's end of story. You don't need to go suing people. Oh, for God's sake.
I agree.
Yeah, exactly. That's like somebody suing McDonald's saying you made me fat, you know?
Exactly.
If that's the case.
I love that.
I have one hell of a case to sue my mother.
Oh, my God. Every grandma in the nation would be bankrupt because how many of you had food pushers after every meal? Don't take this. Eat this. I got lots of sweet potatoes. I got another pound in the garage. You sure you don't want sweet potatoes? You take some home? It's like, no, stop. I said to my Nana, you're a food pusher. Stop making me eat.
You know, speaking of food pushers, I went to New York with one of my friends, and his family is very Italian, and he's like, I hope you're prepared to eat, man. So we get up there, and his grandma cooked, like, baked ziti, and she would not let us leave until that pan of baked ziti was gone, and I was like, oh, man, I'm so full. And then, you know, we're about to leave, and she's like, oh, I made y'all ice cream, and she pulls out these, like, the containers that the whipped cream comes in, full to the top with ice cream. And she's like, yeah, just finish that and y'all can go home. I'm like, what? I'm like, there's no way.
Yeah. I'm about 3 feet too short to be Italian. man, I could not carry that BMI around. Oh, my.
But, yeah, you, we talked about it Tuesday, but you didn't get to talk to Martin or Jeff. Talk about your gift that you just recently come out and told people you had, you know, your psychic abilities and whatnot.
Well, it was strange. I would never have used that term for what it was I could do, because it just came on me. And I always viewed it as sort of a religious thing. You know, I hear God. He talks to me. He tells me to do things. You know, suddenly I'd take notice of someone and I would hear very clearly, and it was a member of the church, he's having trouble having children. Go talk to him and offer to heal him. Because I found out I've got these wicked healing abilities, and that's more scary than any psychic thing I've ever been a part of. But anyway,
right.
You know, I'd hear that. And I left, and I told God, no, you walk up to him and ask him if his wee-wee works. I'm not doing that. Are you out of your mind? You know, and the funniest thing is 2 days later, I was in the church office picking something up, and he walked in. And the second sentence out of his mouth was, we've been having trouble having children. And I just was floored. It was kind of like I told God, I'm not doing that. So he sent them to me. And we prayed over them. And while they didn't get pregnant, they did finally relax about adoption. And they've since adopted 6 kids from war-torn countries, a lot of them with special needs, and it's absolutely wonderful. But if you had said, well, Christina, you're psychic, I would have been like, no, not psychic. Psychic is just crystal balls and shit and rocks. I just sit here and things come to me. It can't be that easy. It can't be like that. It's got to be difficult. And it wasn't until 2010 that I just out of nowhere turned to my husband. We were watching Paranormal State, and I don't watch a lot of paranormal shows, but I caught some of those, and I really liked watching Chip Coffey work. And I turned to my husband, and I'm like, he knew I could do it. I did it all the time. I would turn to him, and in 2001, I turned to him, and I said, you need to sell all of your stock. And he did. And then he had it all in the tech bubble. It burst, and here we got out unscathed. And so he always listened to me when I would just come out with these pronouncements. And I told him, I think I can do that on command. I'd really like to see. So I contacted a team in Illinois, and I said, hey, because they were looking for a psychic. I said, I might be able to do that. I know that I can do the medium work that's been thrust upon me my whole life. I said, but you know what, if I can't do it, maybe I could just be an investigator or something, carry water. And they said, yeah, come on down and we'll test you. So I had to do, God, I had to do 4 cold reads and a walkthrough. And now, mind you, I had never sat down across from someone in my life and pulled up information on them, never. And so I sat with the first one. I didn't know their names. I'd never met them. I just sat across from them and scared the shit out of them, scared the shit out of me. I was just pulling up names of dead people. I was pulling up injuries they've had. I was pulling up miscarriages. One of them, I said to her, you just got engaged. And she almost fell off the chair. They had right in the car ride there. They had said they were getting engaged. No one knew that. They hadn't had a chance to tell anybody. So it was after that, you know, I'm telling people, hey, do you have this friend, Michael? Do you have this? And they're like, yeah, shit, I do know someone by that name who's died. And I was pretty floored. I didn't think that I could do that. And then I worked with the team, and I always, I'm more rigorous than everybody else. I demand at least 80% accuracy, or I don't consider it a good read. And I started doing my walkthroughs blindfolded and deaf. They deafened me. They blindfolded me, one person on each arm. We had a series of symbols, and they'd walk me through a place. And they would blindfold me and deafen me about a mile out. I had no idea where I was. I don't know this area anyway. You know, I've lived here 15 years. I don't travel very far. I'm from the East Coast, where an eight-hour drive takes you through five states. And I came out here, and I'm like, shit, I'm not going anywhere. I drive 2 miles. I have to pack a lunch. I'm just like, I don't want to do it. But, yeah, I was doing that. And the first time we blindfolded me and deafened me, I was even more accurate than I was when I could see and hear, because my rational mind will fight the intuition. Because I'll get an intuition, and my rational mind looks around and says, that can't be true. There's no evidence of that, or there's contradicting evidence of that. And so I would dump the intuition. Now, when I can't see and I can't hear, I couldn't do that. It was only intuition. And we found out that I could see without seeing. They walked me in a hallway, and I shot my right hand out and said piano, and there was a piano there. They brought me over and let me hit the keys, and I was like stained glass, and we turned a corner, it was stained glass. They let me sit down and rest, but they held my hands up so I couldn't touch anything, and I sat down and I went, where the hell am I? I'm in a church pew. And it was a church pew. It was an antique church pew, but it was in a hotel. And so stuff like that, that would happen, and then it just kind of snowballed from there. And now I've, in 3 years, I've gotten to the point where it comes fast, it comes furious, and it's fairly accurate. So,
yeah, and you know, I got my first experience with you and how accurate you are, because the case that I've been working on, the members of the family, they have gifts, and they've had them all their life, and especially the mother, she could see and hear, you know, and feel spirits, and, you know, she gave me a lot of information, which I did not divulge any of that to you, and then you did your remote reading for me, and I would say 90% of the things that you picked up on, she had picked up on too, but her being, you know, new to her gift, per se, she's always had it, but she's really kind of ignored it until, you know, last several years. And so she's like what you said earlier about, you know, doubting yourself, this, that, and other. So a lot of the stuff that she picked up on, you picked up on as well. So that's why I was like, because when I was sharing your readings with her, she was like, oh my God, I picked up on that, and, you know, this, that, and other, you know. And it's just amazing how gifts like that work, you know.
And I had to laugh when the Doe family just made me laugh so hard, because I was like, oh, my God. And I'll let you tell that, because you have more information about it. But it was the weirdest thing. I kept saying the name over and over. Like, why is there more than one? But that was really neat.
Yeah, you picked up on a family, and then she went and looked it up, and they had actually owned that property.
What happened was, when I'm looking at the pictures, I kept hearing Doe. But I was like, it's a name. It's a last name. And it was Doe. And I'm like, did two people name Doe there? Because there's two Does. And I didn't know. And I explained it to him. And because I heard it, I wrote it out D-O-E. And I was laughing. I'm like, what the hell kind of name is Doe? But it was, I said, it was a previous owner of the house, and it was two Does. Well, the name of the previous owner of the house, he was Vietnamese, and it was Do Thai Do was his name. And it was just very funny because I was making fun of myself. I'm like, I can't be right on that. No, nobody's like John and Jane Doe live there, really. But then it turned out to be that. So that was kind of funny, too.
Yeah, exactly. So that's something. So, yeah, I know how good you are with your reading.
Thanks. I really enjoy it, and I'm always surprised when I pick up something just very bizarre and specific. There was one reading where I was – I'm sorry?
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say there was one reading where – and I'm thinking this can't possibly be true, but I told her, you snuck into the funeral home after hours to snip some of his hair, and it was true. She really turned white. She's like, can I get in trouble for that? And I'm like, I don't know. We'll just keep it to us. But and when I hear that in my head, and I'm clairaudient and clairvoyant and clairsentient, so I see pictures, feel feelings, and hear words, and I'll hear that in a sentence and just be like, wow, did you really do that? It's so much fun working with people. I enjoy the hell out of it.
Yeah, exactly. And like I was trying to explain to my client, you know, because she was like, you know, when we move to a place, I always walk in and kind of feel around, you know, with my gift to kind of feel the energy out, right? And, because she said, you know, I can drive by a house or a building or something and it can just creep me the hell out, you know, and I know that it's not got good energy in it. And she said, this house, I couldn't feel anything. You know, there wasn't anything bad or, you know, it was just pretty calm. And she said, you know, as soon as they move in, all hell breaks loose. And I said, that's because of what's going on here. They pick up on that. They know that you can feel them, so they disappear so that they can get some people in the house so that they can torment them, you know?
Right.
And you know, it was interesting. He was talking about how they were out to harm people. And I haven't told you this, but I think it was about a month after they moved in, the mother got really ill, went to the hospital and had to have emergency surgery. She almost died.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, her health got really bad. And some of the symptoms you were talking about with the energy making your head hurt and whatnot when you were looking at the photographs, that's how she feels almost every day when she's in that house.
Ugh. Good.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. So
yeah.
She called me up a couple days ago. I think it was Friday. Her and her kids had been staying at the parents' house. And, you know, and I talked to her and told her, you know, the best bet is to get out of there. But her dogs were still over there, you know, and we were having that major freeze storm coming in. And so she went over there to get them. And one of the dogs was acting kind of weird, she said. It wouldn't come to her like it normally does, you know, and she was scared. She had, you know, because she didn't realize the whole layout of what spiritual world can do with animals and whatnot, you know. And she had taken some holy water with her and you know, put some on one of the dogs. But the one that wouldn't come to her, you know, was acting real weird and whatnot. And she was scared that something was going to attach to the dogs. And I said, Not that I know of. They can make dogs and cats and animals, you know, become ferocious or scared, you know, because of different things. But I said, as far as, like, possessing them, you know, soul-wise, that kind of thing, I said, they're only after one thing. They're after humans. and what, mm-hmm. you know, because with the whole layout of God gave us free will and not them, and they're pissed, they're not going to go after animals. Because if that was the case, we would have a shitstorm of animals, like people running around attacking all of us.
Yeah. An army of Cujo.
Yeah. So I told her, I said, you're fine. I said, just get those animals and get out of there. And she actually made the call to the landlord. She was dreading calling him. And she actually showed him the information about, you know, that I gave her of your read. And he actually didn't, you know, say, oh, that's a bunch of monarchy. He wants me, because I got 2 hours of EVP recording that I ran. I turned on a recorder and ran it for 2 hours when we were there, and I haven't gone through it yet. And he wants me to give any evidence he can to him. There might be a possibility down the road. I'm currently searching to see if I can find somebody to close down that door. Because my concern is, it's being a rent house, you know, this family is going to be moving, but that doesn't stop the next people to come in, you know?
Right. And, you know, he can't not rent it. That's a lot of money to bear that burden. So it puts everybody in a really bad position.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know that someone else might come in and the place is dead quiet. That's what happens with those things sometimes, especially mm-hmm. when it's the land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, but that's where we're at with that. There was something I was going to ask you. Martin, Jeff, you got anything while I'm still thinking of my question?
No, I mean, I'm just enjoying listening to the stories, to be honest.
I'm just wondering if you can tell me the year that the Texans are going to win the Super Bowl so I can make some money.
I really wish it worked that way. You know, I hear skeptics, and they all make sort of the same accusations against psychics. And it's what they'll do is they'll talk to you, and then they'll be like, read me right now. You know, prove it. And I'd love to sit down with them and explain to them. I don't think anybody's ever really thought about it, but the rational mind, the analytical mind, is not the origin of psychic work. It's the intuition, and the intuition is tied to emotion. So if you hijack me and upset me, I can't do a reading, just like they can't do math in a burning building. It doesn't work that way. But also, because it's the left brain reasoning mind and the cerebellum that works on numbers, that we can't pick lottery numbers either. I can't tell you numbers. I can't tell you ages. And I think a lot of that has to do with what part of the brain this sort of gift is seated in. And I've done a lot of studies on neurology and neuroscience, the way the brain works, the way systems work, in order to figure out what it is that this is. And I've been studying all of that stuff for years and years, because I told everybody, can't study the paranormal if you don't know history, physics, biology, chemistry, astrophysics. I mean, you have to learn so many different things to make sense of what's happening. But I haven't found the sweet spot where it comes from.
Right. Well, damn it, you can't pick lotto numbers then.
No. No, but I play the lottery for the irony that I'm a working psychic who can't win the lottery. So I'm trying to figure out the cheat, you know, and I'm dead serious. I stand in front of those machines that dispense the scratchy tickets, and I unfocus my eyes, and I see, do any of them look brighter? How does that? I actually, I experiment. It's sick. it's really sick. I look at those things and I'm like, do any of the numbers like jump out or look different? And then I'll pick them because certain ones look darker, and then I realize it's because it's 5'5", it takes up all the circle. Just like, damn it. I'll figure it out someday.
Oh, yeah. Now, how has the Christian community, I mean, you being a ordained minister and, you know, you have these gifts, how have you had people, you know, not liking that, or how does that work?
Oh, yeah. And, well, you have to understand, I was Roman Catholic, and I couldn't get ordained as a priest, and it's something that I've been called to my whole life. And when God gives you an itch you can't scratch, you find a way to scratch it. So I left, and I'm already an ordained Universalist minister, but I am in care to be ordained by a rebel group within the Roman Catholic Church, hopefully this year. And so I will have this whole theological thing, I won't go into detail, so that I will be an illegal but valid Roman Catholic priest. However, the church that I'm in is separate from that. It's very Catholic in its theology, but it's a separate entity. However, I want that ordination just to kind of have that ordination. I can't explain it. It's when the deacon at my church, it came out that he was beating his wife mercilessly, and he still gets to be a deacon, and I can't because he has a penis. That's when I get a little mad.
Right.
So I went and did my own thing over here. But about the gift, yeah, when I broke away from the church, I actually lost a friendship of 15 years. And
wow.
This person sent me an email, and I was possessed of an apostate spirit, and I need to find humility, and it doesn't matter if I've had this calling since I was 3. Pride can enter a person even earlier, and he will pray for the damage that I'm doing to my children, been bringing this evil into the house, and he can't meet with me because he's a father, he has responsibilities. Oh, my God, you do not want to see the email he got in response. Accusing me of hurting my kids because I don't think like him. And the bastard was a liberal before I was, so that makes it even worse. But anyway, my husband keeps saying he's going to sniff around and apologize, and I said, better not be in person because you're going to be bailing me out. Bishop has a black belt to boot. But with the Christian thing, yeah, when I started going out there and said, I am a psychic medium. I don't prefer that term. I prefer gifts of the Holy Spirit, but nobody knows what the hell you're talking about, so I use the term psychic medium. And, yeah, oh, my God, attacks left and right. Oh, I was in a YouTube video on a channel. It's a documentary, and it had me on a blindfolded walkthrough. And even in the comments, you can't be a Christian and do this and blah, blah, blah. Well, in 5 minutes, if I could sit down with one of them and just show them 3 things in the Bible, they'll be very upset. The biggest one, and I explain this to people, first of all, you don't throw down Bible verses at me. I damn near wrote the thing. So, and because it's just been my favorite thing for 10 years, I study apologetics, and when you're an apologist, what that means is that you develop arguments, and then you develop counters to arguments. So I have a whole tract that I send people to explain why these two go together, because they'll quote Leviticus about, you know, mediums should be put to death. And then they quote a story in Second Kings where King, I'm sorry, Solomon, where King Saul went to a medium at Endor, and she conjured up the ghosts of Prophet Samuel. And they're like, well, this is evil, that's evil. And I explained to him, first of all, what they're condemning is a medium in ancient Israel, and they did something different. They didn't just talk to the dead, all right? Mm-hmm. They captured the dead and forced them into servitude to tell the future. I don't do that. And then if you move into the New Testament, St. Paul talks about discernment of spirits as being a gift of the Holy Spirit. You have to determine whether the spirit is good or bad. Well, how do you do that? You talk to it. I mean, there's all these different parts in there, but here's the kicker. I tell everybody, if talking to the dead is a mortal sin and I'm going to hell for it, then so is Jesus. And they're like, what the hell are you talking about? Jesus didn't talk to the dead. In all three synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, on Mount Tabor, Jesus is transfigured into a being of light. And his apostles see him up there, and on his left is Elijah, and on his right is Moses. Well, Elijah was assumed into heaven without dying. Mm-hmm. But Moses, he dead. He dead and buried. All the scripture. So they both represent the law and the prophets, but the fact of the matter is that Jesus is talking to a dead person. He is speaking with a person who is dead and appearing to him. And there are lots of other instances in the New Testament. I explain to people, if Jesus can do it, and he said in John 10 that we will do even greater things than he did, then why the hell can't I do it?
Yeah.
And then the jaw drops open, and they don't get that part, that Moses was dead. That doesn't occur to you. And I've never seen anybody ever talk about that. And I'm like, guys, he was dead. He was dead and he's chatting with Jesus. And, you know, that's all well and good, and yes, he's righteous, but Jesus is talking to a dead person. If he can do it, so can I. End of story.
You know, and I've had those discussions many a times with clients in my area, because East Texas is it's the Bible Belt region of Texas. I mean, there are churches popping up everywhere. They're on every street corner here in town. You know, it's just, it's overwhelming. And, you know, I've had those conversations with clients where, you know, they're of a certain denomination and they go to church regularly and, you know, and the whole nine yards. And, their house has been peaceful, and now all of a sudden, you know, basically hell has broken loose in the house, and, you know, stuff's going on. And they're like, well, in the Bible and what they taught us in church, you know, that this is not supposed to happen. I'm a Christian. I you know, I believe in Jesus Christ and in God and everything. And, you know, why is this stuff happening to me? This is, you know, not supposed to happen, blah, 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 and ghosts don't exist. And I was like, well, you have a Bible? Let's open it up, you know? And I'll show them scriptures. I'll even show them where Jesus himself refers to the term ghost in numerous times that he talks, even when he was resurrected and appeared in front of his disciples after the resurrection and said, I'm here in flesh, not as a ghost, you know? And I said, now, if Jesus is referring to ghosts, then ghosts do exist. And it's right there in the Bible. You know, they may not have preached it to you at that church, per se, but I said us as Christians and wanting, even if you're not a Christian, if you just want to read the Bible and really look into it yourself. Don't have somebody at a pew telling you what to read or what he thinks, he or she thinks, this is what that scripture said, because all they're doing is doing an interpretation of an interpretation that's written down, right? So I said us as individuals to learn more about the spiritual world and our own spirituality, you got to read the Bible yourself and really look at it, you know? and use it as a tool. That's what it's there for. It's a tool to teach. It's a tool to help you get through hard times, you know, and they're just sitting there going, their eyes, just like you said, their jaws drop, their eyes are open, and then they start reading it more, you know, and then I come back late, you know, a couple days later, and they got a different attitude because they've done all this research and done some reading on their own, and they're just like, wow, you're right.
Mm-hmm. And it's a total paradigm shift for a lot of people. And mm-hmm. there are so many references in Scripture to ghosts and to speaking to the dead, but there are a lot of denominations that have just sort of moved away from the ancient Jewish and continued Catholic practice of caring for the dead and having a relationship with them, because Christ defeated death. And if Christ mm-hmm. defeated death and we're the body of Christ, why the hell can't we still be with each other? You know, it's almost like the body of Christ gets decapitated at death. You know, we should have an even better relationship with those who are standing in front of God and can pray for us now. Hell, mm-hmm. I want someone who doesn't get tired and forget and have to go to the bathroom and have to eat. I want them praying for me. Here. That's why the saints are there. That's why we have a relationship. Death is not a thing for us anymore. It's not a wall or a barrier. And so my ministry is to the dead as much to the living. I've had the incredible honor and privilege of working with a couple of folks where the dead person needed a final sort of closure in order to leave the portion of the afterlife that they were in. It's a healing portion. I call it purgatory. Some psychics call it the soul hospital. It's just a place where you heal and get rid of the ego and the damage that life has done to the soul. And being there and doing that was really life-changing for me. My entire view of life changed with the first time I did that, and it was with a suicide. And mm-hmm. Because I'm clairaudient, I could sit down with the last remaining family member of this person who loved him, and he told me what to say to her, and then she responded. And I don't channel, but I don't have to, because I can hear them actually speak in sentences, and so I can convey them. And I was crying by the end of it. And at the end of it, he left. And then the funny thing is, I got lost on the way home from that appointment. I had to pick my son up. I headed towards Chicago for some reason. It was 2 weeks after I had 18 inches of colon removed, so I was still loopy from the surgery. The team leader made me do it anyway. It was a whole different situation. And I was driving home, and I got turned around, and I'm not going to get to Nathan in time, and I'm flipping out. And so I just start driving. I call the school, and I'm driving. I don't know how I did it, and nobody believes me, but I made it from, the hell was I, Cicero, to St. Charles in 20 minutes. I did not hit a light, nothing. But at the same time, it's not possible. I looked at the stretch of road that I drove and everything. It's not possible to make it to the school in that amount of time, and I couldn't tell you what happened. But when I got to the school, when I did the walkthrough for that house on my way home, this suicide was my first hanger-on. And I was driving home, and it was the dark and twisty road, and a light shone in my car, and there he was sitting in the passenger seat, and he said, I go with you now, right? And I was like, no, go back. Go back. I'll come to you. You don't come to me. I go to other people's haunted houses. I don't live in one. So you fast forward to this drive home, and as I hit the school, I heard him say to me, I come with you now, okay? And I was like, I just started bawling because he's shown up to me on investigations just as a thank you to help me. And it was just really moving to have that experience all the way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always, I've had people ask me that about the spirit world. And like I tell them, you know, it, to me, we don't have all the answers. We just know what we've experienced up to this point. And I said, from past experiences, there are spirits that either, A, they don't know that they're dead, B, they were so, they did some things in their life that they're not proud of, whether they were, you know, asshole spirits and did some real evil things, or they were people that did something that was heavy on their conscience, even up to their death, and they were scared to go to the light and scared to face judgment, you know, on their life. And so they're kind of stuck, you know? And you got to kind of reassure them, look, go to the light. God loves you. Go to the light. Everything will be fine, you know? But you're stuck. You need to go, right? And, and people don't under, you know, they kind of look at you weird, and I'm like, look, that's just what we've come across, you know? And there's other spirits that they just love staying near in order to torment people, or, hey, you know, I've had the question of people tell me this too, and I hear it all the time as an investigator. If someone, you know, like somebody's relative passes away, you know, and they go to heaven, right? How in the heck can they come back here and visit us, talk to us, blah, 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 blah? They got it stuck in their head that once you leave the physical body and you cross over to heaven or hell, whatever people, you know, because different people have different beliefs and all that, but wherever they go, they're there, and they don't have communication with our side, which I think's untrue. Relatives can show up at any moment to check on you, to help you, to guide you, you know. Christmas time, they're probably there, surrounded by you, you know, because that's always a time of family getting together. And, you know, so some of them have got that stigma in their head that once we die and we go where we go, that there's no way that they can come back to our world at any given moment, you know.
Right, and that's that. You know, it seems counterintuitive in some religions that could happen. But then when you ask them, well, then why did Christ come and destroy death? If death is no longer an issue for us, then why is it so strong that it can separate us even though we're bound in love?
Yeah.
And there's not a good answer for that, because sometimes you just need to get people to step to the side of the door and look at it from the other side, and then they'll realize, oh, I don't need this door, and kick it right down themselves. But, yeah, there is just this belief that there's some wall that goes up. And, you know, I think it's because we can't conceive of what the other side is. I had a very brief near-death experience when I was younger, and I've studied them for a very long time. Actually, since that experience, I've read every book there is. Twice sometimes I'll take it out like 5 years later and start reading and go, yeah, I read this. We don't have a conception of the other side. So for a lot of people, there's this notion that, you know, you get sucked into another dimension, or you go someplace very, very far away, and you can no longer get there from here. But no, when you leave your physical body, if you think about it this way, there's just sort of a shift in your time and space. And so these people, I tell all of my grieving clients and parishioners, they're just an eyelash away. They're closer to you than you could imagine. It's not a matter of them going someplace or somewhere. It may be going some time. It may be going just right into the next reality, but it's overlaid with this one. It's not far away. It's right here.
Yeah.
And so they're always with us.
I always try to explain to them that, you know, you got the thing that we've always thought, you know, hell being below us and heaven being to the skies, right? And I try to explain to them with the experiences I've had and with doors and portals and all that, heaven and hell is right there. It's all around us. That door opens, bam, you know, here you go. You know, it's that close to you. I mean, if someone opens up a doorway to the spirit world, there it is. You know, it's not like a long travel. So it's all around us.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, and so for a lot of people, they, you know, it's just, it's tough sometimes, but that's one thing, like I said, I enjoy helping clients because not only am I helping them with their problems, but it also helps me to share the information that I have, you know, and I always tell them, I'm not pushing my beliefs on you, I'm just telling you what I've experienced, and you can take that information any way you want. But it kind of helps educate them a little bit more and get them to start thinking, like you said, outside the box. And I think a lot of people need that. They need that eye-opener to start thinking a little bit more for themselves and not thinking because of the beliefs that have been pushed on them, either from their families or whatever it might be.
I agree. I think paradigm shifting is very important. In fact, the work of a good minister is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. And I take both very seriously.
Well, like I was telling the guys earlier, I've taken a break from the paranormal for a long time since July. I've shut the team down. I've pulled our website down, everything, and just kind of taken a little sabbatical, you know, putting myself first. And I've always believed when I was doing it that it was a calling of God, that God had called me to do this, to help people. And, you know, then I get that call right before Thanksgiving to help that client, you know. And I haven't been doing investigating since July, and in the way I look at it now, it's God knocking on my door going, you think you're leaving the paranormal. That ain't happening, buddy. You got work to do.
Exactly. I've tried. I can't tell you how long I've said no to what he wanted me to do. I just said, no, no. And it wasn't even no. It was like, no, can I do this, though? And I'm like, is this okay over here? Just always like, no, no. And every time that I refused to go, he kept going. And then things would go worse and worse for me, and my connection would get lost and lost, and I'd start running to catch up. You're going to wind up doing what you're supposed to do. And if you have to get swallowed by a big fish and vomited on the shores of Assyria, then have at it. But yeah, some of us need a brick to hit us, and some of us need a house to hit us. But ultimately, we've got it inside us. Before we were born, we all have that call to service, and we answer with who we are as an investigator, as a priest, as a fireman, as a teacher, as a parent. We all say, here I am, Lord, send me. And I think that that's what's so beautiful about this field, how there are so many different people in it who bring so much to it, and yet our passion is just to give people peace.
Yeah. And I just wish that more people in the field shared that passion. And sometimes I think a lot of people that are in the field, though, they had that initial passion to help people and whatnot, and they get caught up in the hustle and bustle, and then they think that they need to be on television or they need to be the most popular team in an area of, say, there's a certain city, and, you know, you got 20 paranormal teams, and they want to be the number one out of all of them that people call, and this, that, and other. And, you know, instead of just kind of stepping back and going, okay, why did I get into this in the first place? What was my love and my passion when I first started getting into this field? And I, you know, and hopefully a lot of those people will have that epiphany and get back to why they got into it instead of worrying about what other people are doing in the field. You know, let's bash them, let's talk crap about this person, blah 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 blah. You know, they're wasting their time and energy trying to shut other teams down, bash other people, discredit them, instead of the bottom line is we're here to help people. You know, we're here to help clients. That's what it's all about, you know, and in understanding the paranormal and possibly getting some questions of our own spirituality answered in the process. But I think a lot of people get lost in that, you know, when they get into the field and they've been in it for a while, they kind of get misdirected in their intentions a lot of the time.
I agree, and I think an equally huge problem in the field is that really good investigators get burnt out.
Yes.
You just get burnt the hell out by needy clients, by the energy required to do this and what you're up against, and the demands on your time and the demands on your energy. You can burn out if you do not have really good boundaries in place and protection. And I know that I keep hitting burnout level as I try to reconcile, you know, how to balance all of these things that shouldn't go together, but are somehow inside me. You don't get someone with all the different things going on that you get in me. And I have no one to turn to. I'll say, hey, Pope, how do you handle being a psychic medium? you know, I have no one to talk to. There's no one out there who does this shit. And so we all need to find our own boundaries because we're all coming at this from a different angle. And we all have to be able to gently tell those needy clients, no, I can't answer your call at 3 a.m. I know that you think it's a demon. It's a raccoon. But can I go back to sleep now? You know, it's like we all have them in our lives. And I think that as much as you get that parajoy and that desire to be on TV, you also get burnout.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Definitely. You know, you talked about this on my other radio show. What was one of your crazier paranormal experiences being in an investigation?
Well, there was one weekend, and I tell everyone, you know, the demonic cases are very, very rare. I've noticed that they're on the rise. And so have many other people, and even the Catholic Church set up new demonology centers because they're having such an increase in issues. But they're very rare. And the two biggest mistakes in the paranormal are to see demons everywhere and to see them nowhere. However, like the second weekend, being a paranormal investigator, I had a Friday, Saturday back-to-back demon fest. I was exhausted. By Sunday morning, I was like, don't you ever do that to me again. Well, I didn't know it was a demon. You had an inclination. Just do that to me. But anyway, the one case that I remember very, very well and will never forget because it was horrifying, and also because there were a couple things in there that have come up again, and I'll bring this up and see if you guys have had this happen to yourselves as well. I was brought in on a case, and this was before we started blindfolding me. I came in, and it was a two-story house, and it had sort of an addition off the back. So you could stand, it was a tiny one too, two-story, but you could stand in one part of the house, and I'm walking around, it feels normal. There's this narrow hallway, and then you make a quick right, and you're in the other part of the house, the addition. And I was walking down the through the house, and I hit the hallway, and I got to a breezeway, and something hit me so hard, my knees buckled, and I turned. Now I'm being filmed by my handler doing the walkthrough. I turned and ran past her and out the door, and she comes flying out back after me, and she's like, "You need to talk, because when my psychic turns and runs, I don't know what the fuck to do. Do I fall on the floor? Do I drop the camera?" You know, I as I'm running past her, I said, "I'm getting my rosary." And she was like, "Jesus, and you just left me in there?" And I was like, "Well, what do you want? You're fine. I'm the one in trouble in this house." So I have a rosary made of exorcist metals, and so I grabbed that and went back in, and I was so dramatic, too. I turned to her, and I'm like, "I'm going in." And so I go down the breezeway and into this addition, and it was like a different place. I can't. It's so hard to describe that feeling of being hit by pure evil. It's happened to me several times, and way before paranormal investigating. I've got a target on my back, so I've dealt with it before. But when it hit me, it's like a blast of really hot air from a sewer. And while it's hitting you, you have a panic attack. And while that's happening, you suddenly get the flu. It's just hitting you from all sides. And so I have the rosary, and I'm walking through. And, oh, my Lord, I didn't even need to be psychic. There were occult signs everywhere. But the type of things that you wouldn't know unless you were really well-read in it. My handlers didn't know what I was pointing out because they were religious symbols. But there were all of these very specific religious symbols, but bizarre ones. However, ones with tremendous power. And they were all around the room where the windows were nailed shut. And there was black sort of thin wood over them so that no light could get into this room where all the symbols were. And there was a big, heavy, old medieval table. And I looked at them, and I'm like, this is the room. This is where the ceremonies are taking place. And I told her, the stepfather here is a practitioner. He's a Satanist. And she was like, "How do you know that?" And I'm like, "I'm telling you right now, if we stay tonight, we're going to see some serious shit." And she was like, "Are we safe? Should we call this off?" And we all conferred, and everybody was given the option to go home. And but we all decided to stay because there were kids in the house. And so we needed to see if there was anything we could do. And as I walked around the house, in this addition, there was like a fourth bedroom, and there was a closet, and there was a crawl space above the closet. Now, it was in this room where they had the greatest activity, and they always heard noises from that crawl space, but it was too small for anything to be up there, and it was separated. There was no way any animal or anything could get up there, and it was empty, they said. When I got there, now, mind you, I don't know anything about their claims. I didn't even know where I was going. They just drove me to the house. I immediately stood in the middle of that room and said, there's a crawl space in there, and that's where he keeps all of his implements. And she was like, what implements? And like the bowls, the chalices, everything. The house was also decorated with just zombie stuff and Halloween stuff, and it was just, it's very disconcerting to be there. And when the investigation started, I got sick twice, like physically ill. I ran outside to gag and dry heave. There was one other investigator along with myself who had children. And we were in separate parts of the house, completely far away from each other with our partners. And we both had a panic attack because we both felt like someone was hurting our kids. And we both ran outside with our cell phones, and we were like, what are you doing here? I got messed with the most. The thing grabbed my shorts and pulled. It hit me in the side of the head. It was poking me in the ear. I was suddenly getting feelings of just dread and horrible thoughts about how everything I loved was going to be hurt and destroyed. It was horrific, and finally we had to call it a night because none of us could do anymore. But the other weird thing was we heard something that's called Satan's hiss. When a protection is placed on a home or an area by a practitioner of the dark arts, the protector is always some kind of serpent. And you will hear hissing. I can't tell you how many times we heard hissing in that house, and not just hissing, but we would hear something dragging across a corner of the wall where two of them met. You would just hear that sliding of the scales. Something wriggled across my foot at one point and wrapped around my ankle, just really quick, fleeting. It was horrible. It was awful. And here's the really weird part that's come up since. We all knew about that crawl space. That was the claim, so all the other investigators knew. That was where I said we were going to find all the evidence we needed. Not one of us put a camera there, a recorder there. Not one of us looked in it. The entire investigation, we all forgot that there was a crawl space until 2 weeks later when I remembered. The other weird thing is there were these cubbies in the room with all of the religious symbols. They had brand new posters up in them. And one of the investigators thought to himself, I think there are symbols written on the wall behind those posters. And then he forgot. Everything any of us thought of to confirm what I believed about the owner of the home, we forgot. The second the investigation started, we all forgot everything. And that's happened since in demonic cases. I'll either forget something or I'll be blocked from information. Mm-hmm. Because I'm exactly the person they want to not be involved. I'm a threat as not just a psychic, but as clergy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'd say that was my most harrowing night.
I've had several cases on the evil side, demonic cases, and I've noticed when I'm involved in those cases, we'll get some information or whatnot, and I may not forget per se, but all of a sudden things in my life kind of get on a haywire, and I get distracted. And then, you know, and the client will call me back, hey, have you gotten, you know, you hadn't gotten back with me on some information you were going to share with me? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot, you know, I forgot to get back with you. And I've even noticed when we're going out for initial consultation, when we first get that initial panic call, you know, and they start giving me the claims, and I'm going through their claims in my mind, because I've noticed when I've done several of these cases, there's a pattern to them. There's certain things that a client will tell me that it'll kind of get my mind going, it could possibly, you know, I never say it is, but it could possibly be this, you know, but I don't tell them that because I got to get more information. But I've always noticed a certain pattern with what they're going through and experiences. They kind of have a footprint that they do. Now, not all the time. Right. It just depends on what you're dealing with, what level. But we've gotten phone calls, and we're like, okay, we're heading out there. We've had flat tires. One case we got within a mile of the home, and the GPS went haywire and got us lost for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, different things that will happen to try to prevent us from even showing up. I've noticed that on numerous occasions. And, you know, it's one of those things, they feel threatened. They're like, oh, shit, we're going to have to keep these people away so that we're not found out, because the client has no idea we're here, and we don't want them to know, you know? So,
right, exactly.
Yeah, I've come across that too.
And it gets to be some strange magumbo. this is a little esoteric, but I explain to people, this has been true in my life. Ever since I was young, like 6 or 7, I've been attacked by those things, and had a lot of religious experiences. And what I can feel the battle between both sides over me, and I'm sure you guys experience the same thing, where things will go horribly wrong in the best possible way. The worst thing will happen, but then out of the blue, there's some kind of saving grace in it. And you can just, if you just stop and think about how you got into that mess and how you got out of it, the getting in is bizarrely evil and the getting out is divinely miraculous. And so you can see the fight that's waged over people just in what we experience, not as saviors, but as people who come in and offer information so that they can find the people who can help them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I, you know, in the case I'm working on now, one of the people that went with me that's on my team still, 2 days after we went for our visit there, her life just went completely just nuts. You know, all kinds of bad things were going on, just snowball effect, boom, 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 boom. And one day she just called me up out of the blue, and that's after, you know, you had done your reads, and we knew then what we were dealing with, and I hadn't told her yet, and she called me up and was asking me about it, and then when I told her, she goes, now I understand a little bit more, because I was being tested, you know? Mm-hmm. I was being tested on my end, on my faith, and my life was going in a shithole. But I fought through it, and now everything's okay. And I said, well, yeah, this is what we're dealing with. And I said, there's some of that battle right there.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And, God, talk about stories. I have too many to tell. One of my funniest stories is going way back when I was 12, and at 3 in the morning I was out on a bay in a little dinghy with a friend because I insisted we had to throw the Ouija board in the water. Oh, my God. I've been doing the strangest shit my whole life. I don't know how I'm still here. But Yeah, you can just, in everything, there's been a saving grace. And once I come through the fire, I'm always like, thank you. Thank you. I know I didn't do that myself, God. Yeah, it's absolutely stunning. And it's important, I think, to even bring the clients into awareness of that. There is a battle being waged over each and every one of us. There is a Cherokee story of a father and a son were talking. And the father explained to the son that there are two wolves on our right and on our left, and they walk with us our whole lives. And the one wolf believes in honor and justice, in defending the weak, in telling the truth, and in charity and goodness. And the other wolf believes in greed and in harming those who are helpless, in taking everything it can, and in lying and doing whatever it needs to get ahead. And the father said, these two wolves are fighting over you for your entire life. And the boy said, well, Daddy, which one wins? And the father said, the one you feed. And I think we all need to understand that whether we admit it or not, we're in the army. We're in the battle. And you can dig a foxhole and stay down there and say there aren't bullets whizzing over your head, but I'm sorry, there are bullets whizzing over your head. And need to get your head out of the sand and really start examining your life and following that path of goodness, whatever that path might be for you. You need to be aware of that battle, and you need to make decisions that allow one side to win over the other.
Oh, yeah. We got one of our listeners in the chat room said that he just heard a growling sound, so we probably pissed off something.
My voice got scratchy, was that it?
No, it was actually before that. So I put in the chat room, I said, well, we must have pissed off something.
Man, that is, oh, I didn't hear anything.
I didn't either.
Oh.
But, yeah, you know, the fun, and, you know, here's another thing, speaking of fun, I'm sure you've come across this too, being a medium and able to talk to the other side. There are a lot of spirits who just have the funniest sense of humor, and they do really funny stuff. And, of course, Mr. Jeff doesn't like me talking about it, because every time we go somewhere where there's spirits that have a good energy and have a sense of humor, they make fun of Jeff. And we'll get it on EVP.
That's because they're jerks.
It's true. The dead can be assholes. What the hell do they have to worry about? They're dead.
Oh.
What are you going to do, take a swing at them?
Well, I wish I had the EGP of them making fun of Jeff, but I don't. But this one guy, we got 56 EVPs of this guy before we even started the investigation. We had a digital recorder at home base, and we just turned it on and we walked in the door while we were setting up. And this dude would not shut up. And Jeff, I put him in because our tech guy wasn't there, so I told Jeff to put the IR lights on all the video cameras. Well, he didn't know which IR light went to which camera because they were all different, right? So he's sitting there trying to figure the shit out, and he's like, man, I don't know which light goes to which camera. And you hear the spirit, class A EVP. He goes, oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
and the same dude, I do have this EVP. I'll play it for you. I was talking to Dad at home base about the DVR, and you hear me say something to him, and then my dad says, oh, and then this dude chimes in, just out of the blue. Well, jerk he is. Here he is.
You got 30 there. Oh, shit.
I could hear it. I couldn't catch what it said. It's sometimes hard to hear.
He said, my dad says, oh, and the spirit says, shit. I'll play it all again.
Okay.
You got 30 there. Oh, shit.
I heard something after the shit. That's what I was trying to make out.
Yeah,
I heard something after
it.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
He just decided to fill in the blank. My dad said, oh, so he just said, okay, I'll say shit.
We had one where, well, this is interesting. I'm working with a couple people on experimenting about this because the average EVP catch for the one team I was on was, you know, between 2 and a really good night, maybe 7. And all whispers, not really clear. When I came aboard my first investigation, we got 52 of them, 10 Class A's, and not in whispers. And so we were like, what the hell? Because when I was on an investigation, the EVPs were through the roof and loud and clear. And in one case, it said twice something that I was thinking at the time. I know I was thinking it. But I'm in a room with an investigator, and this is the first time she's met me, and, oh, my gosh, she's talking my ear off. And I'm like, shh, there are ghosts. We're trying to listen for ghosts. And what do you think about this, and what do you think about that? So I'm sitting there, and I'm listening. I'm getting frustrated because we're supposed to be quiet, and there was an issue with this person on team with that. Well, on the EVP, she's talking up a storm, and we're at a distance from the recorder. And then right into the recorder, you hear, my God, I'd run from her screaming.
All right.
And it was hysterical. And we got a couple like that of this one guy who was kind of a prankster. And at one point, I yawned, and you can hear him say so clearly, I just want to go home. And I'm like, that's what I was thinking. So, yeah, they are hysterical, absolutely hysterical. I have met some of the funniest dead people. Funniest dead. I don't even know how I finished that sentence, the funniest dead people of what? All the dead people I know? That was a really good construction there, Christina. But anyway, I've laughed my butt off at some of these spirits. They are so great.
You know, and sometimes I wish I had more of an ability to see the spirits because some of the people that I've worked with that have the ability, I've been on investigation with them. You know, I remember this. This wasn't actually an investigation. We were kind of just walking around different locations that were supposedly haunted to find locations to put on our conference. And we were walking around this old bed and breakfast house, you know, built in the late 1800s or whatever. And what I found odd was all the locks on the doors were on the outside. Well, before we found out the history, you know, talking to the owner, one of the guys that can see him, he kind of looked down the hallway, and then he kind of looked at me, and he looked down the hallway again. He goes, what the hell is that? You know, and it wasn't like evil or anything. He was dumbfounded by what he had saw. He saw a man in a woman's dress, and he had cowboy boots on. And he was running around the house, just running around. And and he was trying to figure out what the hell this thing, you know, this dude was doing. He's running around in a woman's dress, saying crazy things, and then, you know, we stopped trying to pay attention to that because the homeowner, the guy that owns the bed and breakfast came down and started talking to us, and he explained to us that back in the early 1900s or whatever, the owners, their son, contracted some kind of, I can't even remember the disease he had, but it caused him to hallucinate and act crazy. So all the locks on the door, all the locks on the doors were on the outside so that they could lock him in to certain parts of the house. So this dude was running around, you know, in a woman's dress and in cowboy boot, or no, he had one cowboy boot on and he just had one boot on. And barefoot on the other side. So, as a medium, you see a spirit like that, you're like, "What in the hell is that?"
Exactly. That happened on a case to me because there was this young man, and mullet, whole nine yards, and he was running around the room like a crazy person, and then all of a sudden, he would plop on the couch, and his head would go down. And then he'd jump up and cleaning, fall, boom. And the owner of the house, I was explaining this to her and several other things, and she, no. And then we go to leave, and I was insistent, no, I'm not backing down on this one. This was really weird. And it was a new house, so she was thinking in terms of who had been to the house. And when we got up, she said, "How long ago would this have had to have been?" And I said, "Well, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't have to do with the house necessarily." And she goes, "Oh." And it was, there's other information I gave, but she said, "It sounds like my brother." And I asked her, I'm like, "Did he have, like, some kind of seizure disorder or something?" She said he was narcoleptic. Oh, he would be doing something, and then all of a sudden he'd sit down and go, poof. I'm like, "What the hell is he doing?" But yeah, I said, narcoleptic ghost. when you're doing medium work, and you see something really, really strange, your brain is trying to unravel it. And when I hit that, I will often just tell people, "All right, this is what I'm seeing." Because a lot of what where our errors come in is an interpretation. You know, mm-hmm. We'll see this and say, "Was it your grandmother or this?" And it'll seem like fishing or an error when really we're trying to interpret something that's just damn bizarre. And I've learned to give up and just say, "This is what I'm seeing." And then the person will be like, "Oh, my God, blah, blah, blah." But what I would try to interpret, it would be dead wrong. Like, "Look at that." You know, how do you explain that to someone? I just told her what I saw. And then the other information tied in perfectly to a relative. And that's when I said, "Well, what about that? Did he have a seizure disorder?" So, "No, he's narcoleptic." Oh, sometimes you just gotta, like with the dress, "All right, this is what I see," because how the hell do you interpret that? Is this a cross-dresser's house or something? I don't know.
That's what we gotta figure out.
Here, guys, here's what I see.
Yeah.
So.
Our friend Andre in the chat room, he's a paranormal investigator, he asked, what do you feel the percentage of demonic cases are actually valid, or how often are really the case a demonic case versus just a pissed-off spirit?
You know, I couldn't say, only because there are over 10,000 paranormal teams out there in this country alone. And so just from my personal experience in the past 3 years, I'm the one that calls it. So I know that, you know, I've been accurate. I know that it is or it isn't. I don't know what other people are using to call it.
Mm-hmm.
there are so many people out there. I only know what I've heard, and I've heard that demons are overdiagnosed, and I believe that there's an overdiagnosis of demons because there are so many people out there in this field, and this is one of my pet peeves. There are so many people out there in this field who have zero education about even just the history of religion. You don't have to believe it, but you have to know a little bit about what people believe, about history, about occultism, about when I say to a paranormal investigator, have you read Charles Fort's work, and they're like, who the hell is that? I just want to slap them. How can you not know who that is? His grandfather of the paranormal. How can you not know what the Rhine Center is? How can you not know? But there's a lack of education out there. So, yeah, I think it is overdiagnosed because people just know, like, the laundry list. I got scratched. There were bad smells. There was some growling. It's a demon. And it's like, well, guys, there's more to it than that. But it's like diagnosing an illness via internet. You're going to have it every time, no matter what you're looking at. It's like I went on the internet. I convinced myself I had prostate cancer. I was so sure of it because I had all the symptoms. But
yeah.
People are diagnosing demonic activity via television.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I think it's overdiagnosed. I really do.
Well, I know of one location that lets investigators go to. Jeff and I have been there, and I think Martin's been there. I can't remember. But this hospital in South Texas, when you go there, the caretaker, you know, he's really cool, and he'll take you through and whatnot. But he never once says anything about a demonic entity being there, which we – in our investigation, came across it. We know it's there. A lot of teams know it's there, but it's not talked about, right? It's talked about amongst the paranormal investigators, but publicly it's not talked about. But then when this location is on television on a certain show, then that's all it's talked about. Oh, there's something evil here, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, really? And some of the stuff that they were talking about, nobody that we know has experienced, you know, some of the stuff they were talking about. But it's just like over-sensationalized because it's on television, and then people try to use that in their investigations, you know, like you said. And I've told numerous teams, look, if it's a pissed off spirit and it knows that you're not very knowledgeable in the field, it's going to try to do everything it can to scare your ass off to leave it the hell alone. It could be a human spirit that's really pissed off, and those spirits can scratch you just as well as a demonic spirit. These spirits will mimic some of those things that a demonic would do, right? They will do some of those things in order to scare you to death and get you the hell out of that, right? I said, you know.
Oh, sure.
A human spirit can scratch you just as much as a demon. I said, you know, they can make smells happen, you know? I mean, so just those initial signs, it's more to it. That's why I said, in my experiences, I've noticed a pattern, not just with, and it's not those kind of things we just talked about. It's more in depth than scratching and those kind of things. It has to do with the family makeup. It has to do with how they're acting.
Right. Right.
Different things that the children are experiencing. There's different footprints that these things do that's different from a regular haunting. And so I look for those. But even those, I always stay on the edge because I don't jump to conclusions because I'm one of these people, I got to know for damn sure what I'm dealing with before I make a call. You know, if I don't know what the hell I'm dealing with, I'm going to bring somebody else in and see what their opinion is. If they give me an opinion and I still don't think it's right, then I'm going to go to somebody else. I'm going to keep going until I get the right diagnosis because you can do a lot of damage to a family if you don't know what you're dealing with. Because when you're dealing with something there are different steps to take if it's an angry spirit, if it's a spirit that needs to be crossed over, if it's a demonic. There's not a magical solution that you can do as a paranormal investigator that's going to get rid of all the different type of entities. Each one is an individual case on how you handle it. And I think a lot of people, like you said, don't realize that. They're like, well, you know, there's a spirit in here. We're going to cleanse your home with sage. And a lot of the teams don't even know how to do it. A lot of the teams don't even know how to do that right. They don't know how to.
Right.
That it's not necessarily the sage itself that's cleansing. It's what you're doing as you're saging, praying to God, bringing the angels in, your intent in what you're doing, and the sage being a symbol of God, something that God created naturally on this earth, in the spiritual sense to it. That's the cleansing. It's a spiritual cleansing. It's not waving sage stick around and that smoke chases the spirits out. That's not how it works. I even came across a team that they didn't even sage the house, right? They didn't know really what they were dealing with, so they're like, okay, we're going to cleanse it. So their idea of cleansing it was to spread sea salt around all the windows and doors. And that was it. Well, all they did was they sealed the damn thing in with the family.
Yep.
I was like, what in the hell are y'all thinking? You know, you just sealed the spirit in there. You didn't chase it away. It's like, thank you. You just sealed me up in here. Hell yeah.
Yep.
So
yep.
people got to realize that, you know, I've heard teams all the time, well, I have holy water, I have this, that, and other. And I said, it's not necessarily the object itself. It's the power that you, as a Christian, as whatever your beliefs are, you know, out there in the world, it's what your belief is put into that to help someone, right? Wearing a cross around your neck is not going to protect you. It's what that cross stands for. And the belief that you have protection-wise when you go into a place. That's what protects you, not that symbol that's around your neck. And people
right.
don't realize
it's only,
that.
It's only imbued, it's a representation of a grace. And
yes.
It's not the object that's imbued with the grace necessarily, it's always the belief that's connected with it. If you had a, for example, and I'm using a mythical one, if you had a vampire flying at you and you hold up a cross, he'll laugh his ass off unless you believe very strongly in that. It's all about our intentionality. And if you want to really get in depth, I mean, I did a show once on prayer and I talked about quantum physics. Our intentionality changes reality at a fundamental level. What we want and what we expect can actually rewrite reality in such a way that it will travel back in time and become what we wanted it to be. So mm-hmm. if that's the case, then that means our will is what protects us. Our will
mm-hmm.
and our own strength grounded in something greater than ourselves. You know what? If I believe that an orange could keep a spirit away, it can. And I'm not, you know, saying you have ridiculous beliefs, but it's the intention.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, we're about down to the end of the show, so any websites or anything anybody can go to learn more about you or listen to your radio show or any of that?
Well, if you want to, I am doing readings right now. I don't all the time, but I am doing readings for a donation to the church. We're building up some coffers for conventions coming up. And if you're interested, you can email me at charismatic.universalist@gmail.com. and search for the same on Blog Talk Radio, and you can find my shows there on all manner of things from how to pray to what the Bible is, who wrote it, and why the hell it matters to all just about everything you can think of. And that's on Blog Talk on Sundays, and then on Mondays on Inspire Radio. Monday evenings I have a show called A Question of Faith about the paranormal and how it shapes our beliefs and changes us as people. And that's it. But the biggest one is that email address, charismatic.universalist@gmail.com. You can get a hold of me there.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I have a ball talking to you guys. That was just so much fun.
Well, you, if I don't talk to you soon before Christmas happens, you have a blessed Christmas, and hopefully we'll get together and have you on again sometime next year.
Oh, my God, next year. You just scared the hell out of me. Okay, that sounds great.
Well, you know, yeah, because
are you kidding me? It's 3 weeks. Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. We're approaching the end of the year, so you kind of have to say next year, even though it's not really that far away.
Oh, I know. But thank you. You guys have a wonderful Christmas, too. Thank you so much for thinking about me and having me on. It was an absolute pleasure.
All right. Well, you have a great night.
You, too. Take care.
All right.
Bye.
All right. That was Bishop Christina Wright.
Cool.
I told you she's very funny. And she says,
yeah, she is.
She's no holds barred on what she says.
Yeah, she has lots of good stories, that's for sure.
Jeff, you awake or asleep?
I'm awake.
Usually you're drugged up by now. You're like, arr.
I had a good morning nap.
There you go.
Well, quick plug for next Sunday, we're going to have a good friend of ours. We've interviewed her before. Psychic medium Valerie Renee will be on the show.
Cool.
And the week after that, we're having the URN Radio Network special broadcast on that Sunday, the 22nd. It'll be all the radio show hosts from all the shows on the network joining together for a special two-hour broadcast of just craziness. Scott Grandma may pop in and call in. Don't know who's going to call in. It's, if Jeff may not be there. If he's not, then I'll just talk about his ass.
Brilliant.
But that'll be a special broadcast for the end of the year for the URN network. Since we don't have the end of the world to worry about this year like we did last year, I had to figure out another way to get us all on together. So that's it.
Nice.
Tune in Tuesday, Terrify Radio. I'm going to have Bill Householder on of Household Paranormal. And so that's what's going on Tuesday. Tomorrow is Full Spectrum Unleashed. And that's it for my plugs. Jeff, you got something to play to get us out of here?
I sure do. This is John Lennon
awesome.
Of the Magic.
brotherhood.